good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington.
And I'm Michael Atid, also in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Tuesday, November 18, 2014. Two communities clash at the United Nations Protection Site in Malakal.
There were clashes between internally displaced persons living at our protection of civilian sites in Malakal on Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. And on each occasion, we sent in our personnel to separate the groups who were fighting.
And South Sudanese health experts say cases of measles could be on the rise in the country.
A report of suspected measles last month. We are yet to investigate. We have a measles laboratory lab here in Juba. When it is proved to be measles, of course, we intervene with vaccination.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus.
The United Nations mission in South Sudan says calm has returned to Malakal protection of civilian sites, or POC, following 3 days of violence. Tensions escalated after a group of youth in a newly established POC camp attempted to block humanitarian services from reaching other displaced persons at two different sites in Malakal. Officials say they have improved security to prevent further disturbances. For VOA News, Jacob Achek has more on this story from Juba.
UNMISS spokesperson Joe Contreras say the peacekeeping mission in South Sudan has been providing shelter to tens of thousands of displaced civilians since the fighting began last December. He said they will continue to do so even though these facilities were not designed to host large populations. Those high-destiny living arrangements are ultimately what lead to the frustration and turmoil that can erupt in the type of the violence that began last Friday and continued throughout the weekend.
There were clashes between internally displaced persons living at our protection of civilian sites in Malakal on Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. They involved youths, and on each occasion, we sent in our personnel to separate the groups who were fighting and restore some calm to the situation.
The deputy chairperson of the Malakal camp, Bona Ball, said UN peacekeepers who were injured during the last weekend fighting were trying to intervene and stop the confrontation between disgruntled used. He says those youths were also preventing people from camp site 1 and 2 from accessing the market and its services. UN spokesperson Contora says UNMISS official talks with community leaders in the site and invited their help in appealing to the neighbors. The UN residents themselves to learn to settle disagreement peacefully so that everyone can live in peace.
Right now, we see that the situation hasn't restored the calm, and we hope that community leaders among these internally displaced persons encourage their neighbors to refrain from further fighting because it serves no purpose.
Upper Nile State Minister of Information and Communication, Peter Oth, said the state government, with support from the United Nations, has moved to eliminate sources of tensions.
The state authority has taken appropriate measures, demolished some of the shops which have been established on the UN compound. So until now, at the moment, the calm returns within POC in Malakal. So hopefully there will be no more problems around IDC or within IDC camps.
OSI did not have official number of injured, but estimated that at least 4 UN peacekeepers were injured, as well as the number of used. UN report indicate that staff were particularly targeted during the fighting, and this affected timely services delivered at the camp. Alice Fatner reported a 5% increase in acute water diarrhea causing in POC site 1 and 2 due to the disruption of the sanitation and diarrhea campaigns. Nearly 1,000 displaced people from POC 1 and 2 are living in temporary life space, denying some 100 children access to education. The UK's Department for International Development has stepped in with a contribution of 1.6 million British pounds to help the International Organization for Immigration and its humanitarian partners to expand the Malakal site to house an additional 6,000 people. For BOA News, I'm Jacob Achek in Juba.
The African Union yesterday adjourned negotiations between Sudan and opposition groups in southern Kordofan and Blue Nile states until later date. The mediator Thabo Mbeki says the two parties need time to study the draft cessation of hostilities framework agreement. For VOA News, Lucy Pony reports from Washington.
Mbeki told reporters yesterday in Addis Ababa, Ethiopia, that although more time was needed to consider the draft agreement, the consultations should not take long.
We've prepared some additional documents which we've handed to both parties, suggestions about some additional elements to the agreement which are necessary to conclude the agreement. And so we thought that it would be important for the parties to have a little bit of time to reflect on these additional documents we've submitted to them as proposals to cover all elements of what would go into this cessation of hostilities agreement.
Mbeki said the talks are expected to resume sometime before the end of the month. Ibrahim Gandur is the team negotiator for Sudanese government. He says the government is committed to ending what he calls all media propaganda for the sake of peace in the country.
From today, we are committed to stop all media harassment, whether it has been there or not. We hope the other side will be committed to the same. Let us all work for peace in our country, towards extracting the evils from our pathway.
Gandur says if both parties focus on Sudan's diverse heritage, it could smooth the way for peace in Sudan. For its part, the Sudan People's Liberation Movement North said it was grateful for the efforts put forth on all sides to try to bring an end to the war in southern Kordofan, Blue Nile and Darfur. Yasir Arman, SPLM North chief negotiator, says they are committed to a peaceful resolution of the conflict.
I believe that there is a chance that this chance should be seized with all Sudanese. We should to stop and end the war in all over Sudan, from Blue Nile to South Kordofan, Nuba Mountain, and Darfur. And we are ready and we are committed in the SPLM North and in the Sudan Revolutionary Front, the SRF, to work with you and to make things happen in Sudan.
Arman says holding a national dialogue after a cessation of hostilities agreement is signed is key to achieving peace in Sudan. He says the national dialogue should include all political parties, civil society groups, and all anti-government groups. Mbeki further says talks between the government and the two Darfur anti-government groups, the Sudan Liberation Movement of Mini Minawi and the Justice and Equality Movement, are scheduled to begin on November 23rd. Mbeki said he could not promise when an agreement would be reached as it depends on the willingness of the two parties to reach a peaceful deal. Fighting erupted in the Nuba Mountains in southern Kordofan and in Blue Nile in June 2011, the year South Sudan voted to become an independent country. The war in Darfur has been raging for more than a decade. The UN estimates that at least 300,000 people have died in Darfur since fighting broke out in 2003. Khartoum puts the death toll closer to 10,000. For VOA News, I'm Lucy Pony in Washington.
Still on issues to do with peace talks, women rights activists warn the Regional Intergovernmental Authority on Development, the United Nations, the government and the SPLM in opposition to immediately appoint a gender advisor that would inform negotiators at the Addis talks about gender concerns with special focus on women's issues. As Charlton Doki reports for VOA from Juba, they also want the gender advisor to recommend ways to integrate those concerns into a final peace agreement.
While welcoming a bit of headway that's been made in the nearly year-long process of negotiations, the women say the talks have reached a critical stage and now is the time to incorporate rights for women. They say though women representatives contributed to committee discussions, it's essential that the final peace agreement adequately address women's issues and priorities. They say the parties involved should appoint a gender advisor to champion women's priorities.
Here is a women's activist, Santina Sadia Samson, who read a statement on behalf of women at a Juba News conference today.
The responsibility of the high-level advisor will also include regular consultation with South Sudanese women's organizations, grassroots women groups, women in different delegations at the peace table, and other CSOs working on women's rights, gender equality, and the peace and security issues.
Rita Martin, director of local women's group EVE Organization for Women's Development, says women bore the brunt of the war. She also says women face serious gender issues that must be addressed.
If we see during this conflict, women are not protected. I don't want to go into details of sexual and gender-based violence. We all know that. And when we look into issues affecting women, look at the livelihood. I've been talking about that women in South Sudan, most of them hate families. Their livelihood is challenged. They don't have jobs. Their small businesses are even closed because of the fighting. They don't have safe living environments.
Sadia says women firmly believe the advisor should be female and preferably South Sudanese.
Someone who understands the dynamics of South Sudan and with experience in the peace process with the similar complexities of South Sudan, preferably should be given to an African woman expert unless otherwise.
Martin says the advisor will lobby not only for women to be protected against sexual crimes, but to be allocated prominent positions in the transitional government of national unity.
We call for a woman representative in the executive during the transitional period, which means that either the president or the prime minister or the vice president or the deputies, one of them should be a woman. Yes, men have tried, and they have brought us this far to the conflict that we are in. Give a chance for women to lead this country.
Martin says women also want a provision that specifically provides financial support for the economic empowerment of South Sudanese women.
Women have small businesses. Some of them have good ideas, but there is no support. One of the calls that we have made is to ensure that there is a budget allocation in the transitional period to improve on the lives of women and their children in South Sudan.
Calls to IGAD, the AU, and South Sudan officials to get reaction went unanswered. For VOA News, I am Charlton Doki in Juba.
This is a public service announcement from VOA Africa. U.S. President Barack Obama addressing the Ebola crisis.
Ebola is actually a difficult disease to catch. It's not transmitted through the air like the flu. You cannot get it from just riding on a plane or a bus. The only way that a person can contract the disease is by coming into direct contact with the bodily fluids of somebody who is already showing symptoms. We know how to fight this disease. We know the protocols. And we know that when they're followed, they work. And if we take the steps that are necessary, if we're guided by the science, the facts, not fear, then I'm absolutely confident that we can prevent a serious outbreak here in the United States, and we can continue to lead the world in this urgent effort.
This was a public service announcement from VOA Africa.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, suspected cases of measles are on the rise in South Sudan. That story is next in our weekly health segment.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
what is your favorite season of the year?
I wish it's neither cold nor hot, then I would say that's my favorite season. But anyway, rainy season is better than hot season.
I think I prefer Harmattan, because in Harmattan, the weather gets cooler at dawn, and that's when sleeping is most enjoyable.
The favorite season, I think it's wet season, around July, I think. I love it because during that time, the weather is even cool, because it's a rain season that time.
Favorite season, rainy season. Rainy season because it's cool, and it's, you feel like always being close to your partner and then showing that love and the rest. I love the rainy season because it dries.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus. It's time for our weekly health segment. Today, we are looking at measles. The World Health Organization released new data last week suggesting that progress towards eliminating measles has stalled in South Sudan and that large outbreaks are starting to emerge. South Sudan health officials say measles cases were on the decline until recently. Reports have surfaced from protection of civilian sites for people displaced by the ongoing conflict. Philip Thornaleu has more for VOA from Juba.
Anthony Laku, who managed the expanded programs on immunization, or EPI, at the National Ministry of Health, says South Sudan's most recent nationwide measles awareness campaign was conducted in April this year. However, Laku says no mass vaccinations occurred in the three conflict-affected states of Jonglei, Upper Nile, and Unity. He says humanitarian partners do immunize children in internally displaced person camps in those three states, and this is where new cases have been reported.
We saw a report of suspected measles last month. We are yet to investigate. We have a measles laboratory lab here in Juba. When it is proved to be measles, of course, we intervene with vaccination.
Laku says no cases have been reported in central, eastern, and western equatorial states or in northern and western Bahr al-Ghazal. Wahrab and Lakes states have also not reported any suspected measles cases. Measles is an infection of the respiratory system, the immune system, and skin caused by virus. It can be spread by air and is highly contagious. Laku says the only way to avoid measles infection is through the routine vaccination of children.
Before the campaign, we hear a lot of outbreaks. Almost all the states were reporting cases of measles. But after the implementation of the mass campaign, which was actually good, most of the areas reached a level of 90% and 95% coverage, which is the best coverage to stop measles. So we don't hear any outbreaks because we determine outbreak with cases investigated and proved to be measles.
Laku says when there are no new cases of measles, children are given measles vaccine at 9 months of age. He says routine vaccinations for other diseases such as tetanus and whooping cough starts at 6 weeks from birth. He says in a country like South Sudan, it is not easy to provide immunization services to every child.
We could not cover many children because of the infrastructure, the weak health system, and so forth. And that caused accumulation of susceptible children to measles. That means they are not protected.
Laku says after the initial catch-up campaign in 2005, there should have been another national immunization campaign 5 years later. But insufficient funds and inability to reach every village by land delayed the campaign until this year. He says the nearly one-year-old conflict is exposing more children to measles due to inadequate vaccinations in some parts of the country. And this is a hugely missed opportunity because, Laku says, there is no resistance from local communities about immunizing children.
Sometimes people complain of repeated campaigns, particularly during polio campaigns. They don't understand that additional doses of vaccine give more immunity. So when you explain to them, they allow children to get vaccinated. But for routine vaccination, nobody objects to routine vaccination.
Laku declined to comment on reports of new polio cases in several South Sudan IDP camps. For VOA News, I am Philip Tonaleu in Juba.
And in Cameroon, the story is different. The country has become the seventh African nation to begin using the Calculator 28, a program that calculates female ovulation to help women avoid unwanted pregnancy. The Calculator 28 can be used via mobile phone or as a kit. Moki Edwin Kinzeka has more from Yaoundé.
Belinda Yayin was just 15 years old when she got pregnant last year. She says she wasn't prepared to have a baby.
I don't even want to remember what happened. I gave birth, and 2 days after, I was sent back home with no follow-up of what was happening to my child. The child got sick and passed away. I'm almost traumatized because of this act.
Belinda is one of the estimated 222 million women in developing countries the World Health Organization says would like to delay or stop childbearing, but are not using any method of contraception. Gabonese-born Paul Frank Injinjet Gunjut came up with a new tool to help women better understand their bodies and fertility.
40% of girls and women don't know how to calculate their menstrual cycle. And also, one-third women have the first babies before 18 years old.
He developed the Calculator 28 to pinpoint ovulation, the fertile time in a woman's monthly cycle.
People who use our application have to send a message with the date of last menstruation and the duration of period, and they will receive the date of next menstruation, the fertile period, and the date of ovulation.
Gynecologist Tumasang Florence of the Yaoundé Central Hospital says this tool can have a huge impact in Africa.
L'importance de ce projet, c'est parce qu'on a des problèmes de planning familial.
He says Africa has serious family planning problems. A majority of women do not even know what a menstrual cycle is, and 40% of those who do know are not capable of remembering the last date of their menses, leading to unwanted pregnancies. While Calculator 28 is SMS-based, it can also be distributed as a kit that can show women without mobile phones how to calculate their menstrual cycle and receive information on their fertile and unsafe periods for sexual intercourse. Paul Frank Injendet Gunjut says his project is off to a good start, but he'd like to raise the funds to distribute this Africa-wide.
This appliance is already open in Gabon, in Senegal, Burkina Faso, Ivory Coast, Cameroon, and we hope in the near time in all around in Africa. We need money to create the physical kit to give in the rural area. We need money to give these tools for population.
Women are not the only ones interested in Calculator 28. So are some men.
Quand je vois la réaction du ministre de l'enseignement supérieur, le ministre de l'enseignement des enseignements secondaires, le ministre de l'éducation de base.
Eugene Paul Ndama says he did not plan 4 of his wife's 9 pregnancies and he wishes they had such a tool. He says Calculator 28 could be a blessing for many schools and communities too to help young people prevent pregnancy before they are ready to handle it. Moki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News, Yaoundé.
For several years, analysts have predicted a sub-Saharan African version of the Arab Spring. The debate was reviewed again with the forced resignation of Burkina Faso's president, Blaise Compaoré, early this month. But as Anne Luke reports from our West Africa Bureau, analysts say Burkina Faso is not a spark that will provoke other revolutions, but rather a symptom of the shift already happening across the continent.
2 terms in office, that's all you get. Analysts say Burkina Faso is just the most recent country to send this message to African heads of state. Burkinabe opposition leader Ablaise Ouédraogo says it's time the African Union makes it official.
Ouédraogo
says people say Burkina Faso could be a model for Africa, but we say that the African Union should review its texts and incorporate into its charter the obligation of heads of state to respect their constitutions. He says above all, those texts should stipulate that each head of state coming to power gets just 2 terms. He says that will strengthen democracy on the continent. For years, African presidents, including Blaise Compaoré, have tinkered with constitutional term limits with few consequences. Director of the Center for Constitutional Law in Benin, Frederick Joel Ivo, says the thinking in legal circles is shifting to two-term limits. He says a constitution is designed to be revised, to adapt with the times. But African states have also set certain provisions in stone, things like the secular and republican nature of government. He says that means there will be no Kingdom of Benin or Islamic Khalifa of Senegal. He says presidential term limits should be added to that list of untouchables. The two-term message has been delivered in a variety of ways. In Benin, the Constitutional Court in 2011 said term limits could not be revised. In Burundi this year, the president couldn't get enough votes in parliament for a revised constitution. In Niger in 2010, it was a military coup that ousted President Mamadou Tanja after he pushed through a constitutional referendum to extend his current mandate and remove term limits. In Senegal in 2012, it was the ballot box that ousted President Abdoulaye Wade as he sought a third term. He had changed the constitution during his first term, which he then argued didn't count against the new two-term limit. Civil society and opposition politicians held months of sporadic protests. Wade was voted out. And now Burkina Faso. The continent with the youngest population in the world has some of its oldest leaders, hanging on from an era of dictatorship and dynastic rule. Analysts like Professor Boubacar Ndiaye of Worcester University see a certain inevitability to these leaders' undoings.
These regimes are fundamentally unstable. They are just living on borrowed time until something happens. Shows that clearly.
Ndiaye studies civil-military relations in Africa. Soldiers stepped up briefly to fill the power vacuum that Mr. Compaoré left. But Ndiaye says what is, quote, major is what they didn't do, which is to crush the protests. Analysts say they are keeping their eyes on the two Congos. Both Joseph Kabila and Denis Sassou Nguesso would need to revise their constitutions to run in 2016. An opposition leader there told VOA they plan to go ahead with two protests this month. Anne Luck, VOA News, Dakar.
Keys Records.
That's our show for this Tuesday. We leave you now with the song Ugandan Girls and Sudanese Girls by Jose Chameleon and Freedom Boys.
Jose Chameleon, Freedom Boys.
Lamba dam bam bam, Freedom Boys, Chameleon combination. Lamba dam bam bam, Sudan, Sudan, Uganda, rock the nation. Yala Ugandan girl, dem bang kude yala yala ira tadin deka o.
Sudanese girl, in Tumsai, Jemili, Wahilu.
Nampena wangu. Banana.
We have been listening to Jose Chameleon and Freedom Boys with the song Sudanese Girls and Ugandan Girls. I'm Michael Atit in Washington.
And I'm John Tanza, also in Washington. Thanks for listening. We hope you can join us again tomorrow for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
Your baby girl.
wadilana haja kila najaribu